The big question in business, can the fury over union power in Wisconsin spread to any state?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning. Happy Friday. From APM American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. They're looking for Democrats in Madison today. The Republican governor and GOP lawmakers need just one Democrat to allow for a quorum in the state house. That vote would let a bill pass in the legislature weakening the state workers' union. How does that affect you and me? Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large for CBS Money Watch. She's with us live from New York. Morning, Jill.
Good morning.
Why is the governor in Wisconsin proposing this change?
Well, you know, unlike the federal government, by law, states can't operate with a deficit. Think of the situation as if it's a family that's facing financial problems, mm-hmm. but can't use a credit card as a safety net. States have to make deep cuts in spending. Everything from pensions to programs are on the table.
Is this, Jill, just about Wisconsin, though, or is this going to spread, do you think, to other states?
I think this is going to spread. There are similar battles being waged from big states like New York and California and Illinois down to the little ones like Rhode Island. States, cities, and municipalities are simply getting crushed by the unrealistic promises made during the boom times.
And they're finding anything that they can to do this, to get these budgets in balance, right?
Absolutely. And if you go back to our family analogy, if you made a promise of a donation when things were good, but then you lost your job, you'd have to renege on that promise.
Jill Schlesinger from CBS Money Watch, thank you.
Thank you.
Another Republican governor is dealing with his state's budget crisis by nixing federal funds for high-speed rail. Florida's Rick Scott says he's rejecting $2.4 billion of money for a rail line between Orlando and Tampa. But now an influential group of lawmakers is trying to salvage that line. From the Transportation Nation Public Radio Project at Station WNYC, Andrea Bernstein reports.
One of the people caught off guard was John Mica, the Republican chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee.
I was taken aback. I had about 15, 20 minutes to argue my points.
He wants to give the private sector a chance to complete the rail line.
No risk to the taxpayers, no additional cost to the state of Florida.
At least eight groups have expressed interest in paying the $300 million needed to complete the line, plus any cost overruns. Democratic Florida U.S. Senator Bill Nelson says responsibility for the project would be transferred from the state of Florida to another public agency.
We are looking at several. Amtrak is one.
But the money would come from an international construction firm. They want to get in on the beginning of what may be a much longer rail line that extends to Miami. The U.S. Department of Transportation says the Congress members have a week to put together a deal or the $2.4 billion goes elsewhere. New York and California are clamoring for the money. I'm Andrea Bernstein for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Markets in Europe are mostly lower right now. The FTSE off about 0.5% in London. The DAX and the French shares are pretty much flat at this moment. Food maker Smucker's said profits were lower in the last 3 months, but that report beat analyst expectations. Campbell's Soup today reported a dip in profits in the last quarter. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow was up 0.25%, about 30 points to close at 12,318.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering sleeping money alerts to notify customers when their money could be doing more. Learn more at allybank.com. And by reputation.com, protecting and improving your online reputation while deleting personal data from websites that sell it. Reputation Defender is now reputation.com.
President Obama's federal budget proposal doesn't include any cuts to Social Security. A lot of folks in Washington, though, say real budget solutions have to start with shoring up that entitlement program, something Republicans and Democrats came together for in 1983. That's when President Ronald Reagan and House Speaker Tip O'Neill helped save the program from going broke. Julian Zelizer is a presidential historian at Princeton University. He's with us now to talk about that moment in history. Good morning.
Good morning.
Talk about what happened in that Social Security deal from the early 1980s between President Reagan and Speaker Tip O'Neill.
The 1983 reforms were very important and very dramatic. Congress made the decision to solve a short-term imbalance in the program where we didn't have enough money coming in compared to what we were spending. Benefits were cut, taxes were raised, and Republicans and Democrats entered into a bipartisan agreement that fixed the program and got it on sound footing.
Well, it didn't quite fix it, because here we are nearly 30 years later, and we're talking about many of the same things that we were talking about then, right?
That's absolutely true. The 1983 reform was about a short-term problem. Literally, the program was about to run out of money. And that crisis, which was more immediate still than the one we face today, placed a lot of pressure, not just on Democrats and Republicans, but moderates in both parties to come out and take rather courageous stands at the time to find a solution.
What can we learn from that today, then?
Well, I think the first is that reform is possible. The fact is, Social Security was reformed in 1983. It was reformed in 1977. And it was also reformed many times before that, since its creation in 1935. It's very important that there's going to be leaders, meaning members of Congress and the White House, who are willing to do what their party doesn't want them to do.
And could something like that happen today? I mean, you say it takes leadership and courage. Do you see leaders and courageous people out there?
Sometimes, you know, history takes you by surprise. You don't see the leaders today. You don't see the bipartisanship. But this program is enormously popular. And one thing that Republicans and Democrats understand is that there will be payback for both parties if the system breaks. And so I think that pressure can counteract the polarization we see in Washington.
Presidential historian Julian Zelizer from Princeton University. Julian, thanks.
Thank you.
And finally, from the Marketplace Spoiled Food Desk, the Guinness Book of World Records has identified the world's oldest wedding cake. It's 113 years old, baked way back in 1898, 50 years before Tupperware was even invented. The Willis Museum in England has the cake on display. A sampling of the fruitcake inside shows the dessert is still moist. But the outer shell isn't doing so well. The frosting is cracked from the blitzkrieg of World War II. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles, on Twitter at Radio Chio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
We're all living such increasingly digital lives. What do you suppose happens when we just pull the plug?
I have not been using the internet for email, for Facebook, for sharing photos.
I'm Kai Rizdal, getting by getting offline. Next time on Marketplace, the rest of the day's business news as well. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.